Welcome to In the Limelight with Clarissa Burt, international media celebrity, supermodel, and renowned beauty and lifestyle expert, as well as founder and CEO of Enveloper, multimedia platform for women, and sought-after inspirational speaker on women's issues. You'll connect with Clarissa's super influencer celebrity friends and experts as they speak about health, wealth, beauty, lifestyle, business, the love of giving, and the love of living a model life. Now, here is Clarissa Burt.
Hey, everybody, it is Clarissa Burt on this fabulous Tuesday. I find myself in San Diego, California. I know, it's every week, where's Waldo? It's where's Clarissa? Because I do move around a lot. As you know, last week we were talking about coming off the Oscar parties. This past week, I was doing an event with Greg Reed, his fabulous Secret Knockout here in San Diego. Lots of great connections, fabulous networking. He's a superstar as always. And I have something else I wanted to talk to you about very quickly. And that is, on the 25th of March, we are going to be premiering my first book. Yay. And it's the book about my whole gluten-free travels and trials and tribulations. So the Italian Gluten-Free Gastronomy Cookbook is going to be premiering at a block party. It's in Desert Foothills Library out there in Phoenix, Arizona, more specifically Cave Creek, Arizona. So from 1 to 4 p.m., come on up to Cave Creek. We're going to be at the Desert Foothills Library. You can buy tickets at dflaevents.org. And there's going to be just all kinds of fun stuff going on. Music and, I mean, you know, the whole nine yards. We've got beer and wine and food and all kinds of things. And the price of the ticket includes all that. So come on out, say hello to me and some other local authors. In the meantime, as you well know, every week I bring on my superstar friends. And whether I've met them in person or not doesn't really matter, because we've either met through social media or we've met through PR agents and the like. But, you know, I choose them, I pick them, and I want to bring you the best of the best. And that's who my first guest is. We're going to be talking sports today with our two guys. So actually, we're going to be speaking excellence today, excellence in sports with this first guest. We're going to be talking hockey. Yeah, we're going to be talking hockey. And I just absolutely love this idea because we're going to get into that a little bit when I now introduce Chris Dyson. Hello, are you there?
Hello, Clarissa. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm good. Oh, I'm so excited to have you on, Chris, because we're going to get to take a little bit of a deeper dive into you and the work that you've done over the last 30 years or so, and your coaching and working a lot with kids, with students and the like. But I did want to take also a deeper dive into your book, which is called Target Practice, 8 Mistakes That Ruin a Love of the Game. Wow. So absolutely. Let's get started a little bit. Yeah, let's get started in how, I'm assuming, you at a young age became a hockey player. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And my path to hockey here in Canada was well expected, but my path is not the path that most people took. I've been doing this for, as you mentioned, now 30 years, and I developed an early interest in hockey when I was actually in the hospital as a child. I was in the hospital a fair bit with a congenital heart condition.
Okay.
That usually doesn't lead to a career in hockey, but I developed a real passion for the game at that time. And what I'm really passionate about is helping kids stay within the game. And we have a goal right now to positively affect 50,000 children and coaches in minor sports, not just hockey, but in minor sports, to help them stay in the game. And I developed that passion while I was in the hospital. I had great mentors, great coaches, people who helped me through my struggles in life. And I want to pass that on to the kids and help them, because a lot of times the coach is the second most influential person in a child's life. And sadly, in today's world, sometimes the most influential person in a child's life.
Right. No, without a doubt. Yeah, absolutely. So let me understand. You're in the hospital. You're laying in the hospital. You're not well as a child. And the coaches were coming to you, or this happened once you got out of the hospital?
No, I had great folks in the hospital, consultants and counselors helped me through the situation, and my mother was, obviously a very big factor in my life. And then after I left the hospital, I had great teachers and great mentors outside in the real world that helped me understand that, my challenges as an early age shouldn't get in the way of what I really want to do with my life. So I really took that to heart and decided early in life that that's what I wanted to do, was help children as well.
So So here's what I'm understanding. You really did want to play hockey. You found out that you weren't well and probably couldn't, but through the help of mentors and strong people in your life, like your mom and the like, you were able to forge past any of the obstacles, the mental obstacles most foremost, I'm assuming, to move into your life in sports.
Absolutely. And I did play hockey up until about 2 years ago. I still played regularly 3 to 4 times a week, something doctors mm-hmm. told me I would probably never do. But everything that I've ever done has been come from that mindset that was created in me at an early age, that mindset that you can do what you want to do. You just have to believe in yourself and find a way to do it.
Well, here's the deal about that doctors told me I never would and never could again thing. I have heard that story so many times, Chris, happily and thankfully. I'm kind of wondering if we shouldn't just put a veto on doctors ever saying that to anybody again.
Because are they doing more harm than good? I think that actually when they do tell you that, sometimes it's motivation to go out and do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing more harm than good when they say something like that. And I don't know that, you know, they like to say, well, we don't play God, we're not God, and we don't play God. But when you say something like that, it comes pretty darn close to somebody believing, you know, what you're saying and in those words, right? And never really trying. And there are those few like you who have said, no, that doesn't matter to me. I don't care what the doctor said. I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. So how did that play into your, did you get better? Or did you have to just deal with your condition in a different way?
Yeah, well, I was 7 years old when I had open heart surgery and had a pacemaker implanted following a record-setting day of 100-plus cardiac arrests is what they estimated. And anybody who knows anything about the heart and heart conditions, a cardiac arrest generally results in either death or brain damage. And fortunately, sure. I'm talking to you. I'm not dead. And my wife may argue the fact, but I'm not brain damaged. I came out of that perfectly fine. And, you know, that was kind of the catalyst for me to say, you know what, I can do what I want to do at 7 to 10 years old. Right. And when I left the hospital, I basically knew the path I wanted to follow, and I also was given the strength to do it.
When did you start moving into coaching?
It was probably my late teens when I really developed that interest in coaching and giving back to the people that had helped me and helping kids in the same situation. I used to spend a lot of time, and I still do, in the hospitals helping children and trying to mentor them as well. And that's kind of where that love of working with kids and obviously the connection to hockey made it just a natural course.
Right. Give me one of the I don't know, I'm sure they're every one of the kids that you work with is super special, but the one incident that kind of steps out and stands out to you as, wow, I know I really, really made a difference with that kid.
Names, there is just one incident that stands out above and beyond anything else, and it was a young gentleman that came to our goaltending school about 10 years ago who was signed up for our highest level program, which is a very elite program. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he stepped on the ice, it became very apparent that this young man was in the wrong course and shouldn't be there. But we helped him get through that week, and you know, we got him to the point where all the kids were banging their sticks on the ice and cheering and helping this young man on. Aww. And he gained his confidence throughout that week. But that's not actually the really exciting part of the story. And it takes a big dip. About 3 or 4 years after that incident, I was working one late day on the computer, and I got a voice request, Skype chat request. Mm-hmm. And it was mm-hmm. this young man, who I hadn't talked to in 3 years, who reached out to me to tell me he was going to kill himself.
Oh.
And, you know, it was quite a surprise at this time of night, and 3 years later, having not spoken to this young man, but we'd made such an impression in him and helped him so much through that point in his life that he reached out to me at probably his darkest moment. So we spent about 3 hours on the computer that night chatting back and forth, and long story short, he did not commit suicide that night, contacted me the next day to thank me for helping him through that dark moment. And then 3 or 4 years later, he contacted me again. He stayed in touch with me on a yearly basis forever. Now he's married with children, and he credits that one evening and our goaltending school and our kindness to work with him to saving his life.
That's extraordinary, Chris. Great job. Yeah. Lots of that going around too. Lots of, you know, the teens, I'm sure that you may see it or encounter it more than when you and I went to school, for sure, because I don't remember a lot of that going around. It was a little bit of bullying, but I really don't remember a lot of it at the time. But, you know, we really didn't talk about teen suicides in the 60s, 70s, and 80s as much as we are today. You that are closer to the kids, you know, than I am, what do you attribute that to? What's your gut feeling on that?
it's one of the things that I continually talk to the coaches, and I work a lot with coaches now as well, because I think there's a real need to help them understand exactly what we're talking about. The children today are in a whole different situation. The adversity they're facing, the things that are going on in their lives are so much different than when we were kids. And, you know, I attribute that a lot to the online stuff that's going on. And just the fact that I think the world has gotten so busy that a lot of parents don't really see what's happening in their children's lives. Yeah. And a lot of coaches in minor sports, where a lot of, they used to be mentors, they used to be really good help for the children. It's all about winning. And I think that's a huge mistake in the world now, that there's just not enough focus on the fact that they're people. They have needs, they have desires, they have problems. And a lot of that is overlooked. And I think that that's a real role that coaches need to understand, that they can affect the child's life for the rest of their life.
Chris, what in your opinion? What in your opinion can parents be doing differently?
Can parents be doing differently?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a touchy subject, but
because,
I think.
Well, I know it
really
is, because, but you are, as you
we
said,
need to take
sometimes.
A huge step backward. I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think what really needs to happen is parents need to take a huge step backwards and realize that, you know, their kids are the number one thing in their lives. They need to pay a lot more attention to what's going on. They need to pay attention to their social media activities. They just need to be more aware. I mean, in my role as a coach in minor sports, and I've coached all the way up to pro as well, but through, I focus on the kids because that's the thing I love the most. But I see so often I have students coming to me that are clearly struggling. They're clearly not on the right path in life. You know, they're out doing drugs. They're doing things that are just, the parents should be noticing, and they're not even noticing because they're too busy in their own lives. And I'll just give you a real quick story. I had a young man come to me last week, 9 years old, nice little guy. He's challenged. He's got some problems. He came from a foster home. And his foster dad is standing 15 feet away, and this young man's in the net going, "Look, I did this. Look, 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 Daddy, look." Yeah. And he's just thrilled with what he's done. And dad does not look up from his iPhone, playing a game on the computer. He says, "Not now, I'm busy, leave me alone."
Oh my gosh, you're kidding me.
I felt like going over and smacking him upside the head.
Oh, wow.
You know, all this young kid wanted was some attention.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say, I'm going to remember that we had drugs back in our day too, but there are so many more of them, and I think it's much more accessible now, and there are a lot more synthetic and chemicals in what these kids are, you know, approaching these days. Plus, there's so much more information about, you know, how cool this is, and you know, we just, there's so much stuff online, and you hit it on the nail when you said the online stuff. Plus, the bullying online has become just off the charts. Listen, Chris, we've already got to our first break, so I'm going to ask you to hold on there a second. We have been talking to Chris Dyson, everybody, Coach Chris Dyson, and you're going to want to take a look at his book. We're going to take a look at that and where we can find that when we get back. So do not go away.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
The Voice America Live Events Channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed, by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
Are you ready for provocative discussions with some of today's most powerful movers and shakers? Tune in to The Art of Significance, featuring Dan Clark, the modern-day Napoleon Hill, who interviews the wealthiest, most successful celebrities and business leaders on the planet, who are using their influence to change the world. From authors to entertainers, sports figures, educators, to military leaders, Dan covers multiple topics. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Influencers Channel. Change starts here. Change starts now. Join us, the Voice America Influencers Channel.
You are listening to In the Limelight with Clarissa Burt. You can call into the program at 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to info@clarissaburt.com. Now back to In the Limelight.
Yep, everybody, you are back in the limelight with Coach Chris Dyson. You can go to learn a little bit more about him as we are speaking at targetpracticebook.com. Lots of information there. You get the book at Amazon. There's places there on the site that you can go to find out how to buy the book. And we're going to continue the conversation. I know that Chris is up in London, Ontario. It's a little chilly up there, but if you're going to be playing hockey, I guess that's where you want to be, right, Chris?
Yeah, Canada's a place for hockey, and we still have snow.
Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, so we were talking about your book, Target Practice, The 8 Mistakes That Ruin a Love of the Game. And you said it's a must-read for coaches and for parents. So let's take a deeper dive into some of those mistakes, if you don't mind. I think that our listeners would really enjoy hearing a couple of the things that you suggest.
Absolutely. Well, I think that probably one of the biggest mistakes that coaches make in sports in general today is it's all about winning, and I think that they forget that the game still has to be fun. Doesn't matter what age you are, it's still a game. It still has to be fun. You know, I was fortunate enough to be at Wayne Gretzky's inauguration into the Hockey Hall of Fame and have a conversation mm-hmm. with him, and he had told me prior to that, when it stops being fun, I'm going to retire. And right. This is the man who's the greatest hockey player that ever lived, and he still understood the game had to be fun. And I think mm-hmm. so many coaches today focus on nothing but wins and losses, and that's a huge mistake. The game still has to be somewhere where kids can go and have fun and enjoy themselves.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend of mine who has her girls in volleyball, and they're at a very, very advanced level in volleyball, and it just becomes so pathetically competitive between the parents, Chris, and that just cannot be healthy for the kids to be watching and seeing.
No, and I've seen so many of those situations where it's the parents living vicariously through the children, and it's all about, you know, I couldn't do it when I was a kid, so you have to do it for me. I've seen fights in stands. I've seen parents screaming at each other, screaming at their kids in the car because they didn't do the right thing. And, you know, nobody goes out there to do the wrong thing. It just happens sometimes. It's part of life, so I think we should be a little more accepting to that and deal with it.
I feel so sorry for those kids, too, because as you said, where's the fun in that? And, you know, I think that I've also noticed a lot of anxiety is born in these kids due to, you know, performance level issues or lack of great performance level issues. And it just breaks my heart. That's all I have to say about that.
It's scary in some situations. I have one of my students that came to me for a number of years, very talented young man. His dad came to see me when he was 14 years old and said he'd been on the ice 39 hours in the previous 24 days. That's insane. Pro players don't practice that much. And then this young man who had a good career ahead of him should have probably played pro hockey, wound up quitting 2 years later because he just got burned out.
Right. Here's another question that I have for you, and then we'll get back to your book in a second. But I know that you took, if you will, in the game of hockey, a more of a niche in your coaching, and that is for the goalkeeper. You're also a founder of the Puck Stoppers Goaltending Development in Schools, right? So, And that is really the ultimate, if you will, of performance, right? And of anxiety, because if the puck gets past you, it's all your fault, isn't it? So how do you teach I don't know much. Look, I played field hockey in the 8th grade gym class. That's all I know about hockey. But I'm assuming, Chris, that that's got to be a really high level of anxiety for these guys.
Yeah, it is the most difficult position in all of sports to play. It's also the most demanding, and it's the only sport that I can think of anywhere where if you make a mistake, a giant red light goes on behind you and 18,000 people yell at you. It's demanding, and goalie parents have it very tough because it's stressful, more stressful for them sometimes than the kid in the net. And that's something I really work on with my students is the mental side of the game, how to deal with that and how to take a step back and not take it personally. And that's again, a huge factor that coaches sometimes miss. They put all the pressure on the children that they have to win. You can't win every game. It's impossible.
Impossible. So you do set that up. Whereas you want them to be competitive and you want them to win. It's also okay not to win, because that's going to happen too. I mean, look what just happened to the Patriots, right? I mean, that was a crazy game, and everybody expected, you know, Tom Brady to pull it off one more time, because he always did. And it just doesn't happen. It's not because they didn't play a great game, because they did. And so I totally get the point there. What's another one of your 8 mistakes that you like to share with parents and with other coaches in your book?
Well, coaches, as I said a couple of minutes ago, coaches have a huge impact in the child's lives that they work with. And I think so many coaches don't take that step back and realize that something they say today may still be in that child's mind 30 years later when they're an adult with children of their own, and they've developed a paradigm around that that affects them for the rest of their lives. So just another quick example, I have one student who came to me a number of years ago who was a junior A player, and the coach said to him in a junior A practice, and that's the top level of minor junior hockey in Canada, the coach said to him, put your equipment in that garbage bag and go home because you're garbage.
Oh my gosh.
This is an 18-year-old who had potentially a junior A career and a pro career ahead of him, quit the game after that, never played the game again, and 30 years later is still talking about this incident. So it's affected him for his entire life, and this coach probably has no clue that he did that.
You know, it kind of sets up that I'm a loser feeling for the rest of your life. I don't think you can ever, you can never shrug something like that off.
No, it sticks with you for life, and that's the thing that coaches just don't understand. Simple words can affect somebody forever.
Did you ever speak to this guy again or keep in touch with him? Did he ever reach out to you?
He's actually a mutual friend, and we've had conversations. My friend said that he still, when he goes out, that's still a topic of conversation. He's still living in the past, and it's stuck with him forever, and it's affected his life
pretty much everything.
He's just not wanting to go back to play hockey, but he's had lost his self-esteem, and it's affected everything in his life.
Yeah. Well, let's get him to read your book and stay real close to it, because a lot of times that can be, you know, there's like an aha moment that comes to you in life where that kind of thing really can serve you so that you can serve others. And that's all I have to say about that, because it's happened to me in a different way. And we are who we are because of the experiences that we've had. And I kind of like who I am. And I'm sure if he has his aha moment, he's going to love who he is too. Chris, give us another one of your mistakes. We've talked about a couple of them. Lots of them have to do with the parents. What are the other mistakes that are being made out there on the field?
Well, the connection between the coach or the parent and the kid, the child, and the respect factor. I think a lot of coaches, or parents as well in some situations, talk down to children and talk to them like they don't understand what's going on, when in reality, kids understand a whole lot more than anybody gives them credit for. And if you worked with enough kids, you'll understand that. And if coaches actually give the children the respect that they deserve and talk to them in a manner that is straightforward and fair and set boundaries and set accountabilities and hold the child to that, there is no problem with being disciplinarian and making sure there's accountabilities. But there's a big difference between that and screaming and yelling at a child to do something without giving them boundaries, expectations, and real goals, and telling them how to achieve those goals. And that's a huge mistake I see a lot of times on the ice or in sports in general, where minor hockey coaches, minor sports coaches in general, just say, do it, without the respect or the accountability of allowing that student to understand what's happening and why they should do it, and making a connection between the coach and the child to understand that child's needs, desires, wants, and what motivates them. And that's a huge factor. A lot of times, kids in sports, their motivation is, I want to have fun. Mm-hmm. They don't care if they win every game, where the coach or the parent might be screaming at them to win, that they have to try harder. In reality, they don't care. They just
so the kids
have fun.
Their heads, they have their heads screwed on better than the adults do, huh? Is that what I'm hearing?
Quite often, yes.
Let me ask you this, Chris. I love the respect factor. I think that's awesome. But are the kids treating the coaches with respect? I remember when respect was respect, and I was brought up in a whole different era in a whole different way, and I'm sure you were too. So how do you do that? How do you
that's
work around?
That's a really great question.
I'm sure.
And you are 100% correct. The respect factor does not go both ways a lot of times nowadays in the world. And that falls back on the parenting, which is why I'm writing my second book about how children should be raised and respect their parents and the people they work with. That's another story. But you're exactly right. The respect factor is different. And I've been fortunate enough to coach over in Europe. I was over in Finland coaching as well. And it's a very different mindset of the children in European countries and North American countries. The respect factor is completely different. Over in Europe, they ask to do something, they smile, they go do it, they don't argue, they don't have a problem with it. In North America, a lot of times you have children who are arguing with the coach or just flat out refusing to do things. So, yeah, you're right. The respect factor does not go both ways a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have an awful lot of entitled kids these days, and I guess it's the adult's fault. I don't know where everything slipped through those cracks, but I don't think we're any better for it. And I think that, you know, certainly we need to be teaching a lot more respect to these kids than we're teaching them. And certainly a coach is somebody to be listened to and revered and not questioned. And so if any of you kids are out there listening, there you go, Chris. I just did you a solid.
I do want to say, you just said respect the coach and do what they say. But actually, I teach my students and I also teach my coaches that there's nothing wrong with questioning the coach or the instructions done properly and fairly.
Oh,
and
that's
respect.
Fine. Yes. Yes, of course. Well, of course, that's exactly what I meant. Yeah.
Blindly
I mean,
following the leader is not the way of the world.
No, of course not. But I mean, you know, respecting and respectfully questioning, I think, is definitely okay, without a doubt. Any last parting words, sir? Anything you'd like to leave our listeners with? Another mistake that's being made in the game that sort of you'd like to see rectified?
Well, I think I've touched on the real big ones here, but I just want to make sure that all the coaches and all the parents out there understand that children want to have fun, they want to enjoy the game, and they're more than willing to do what is asked of them with that little bit of accountability on the coach's part to make sure that they're understanding, giving the explanation of why to do things and how to do things. And I've always found in my years of coaching that explanation of why you want somebody to do something because they're going to benefit from it or it's going to change something to make them better, those are little details that quite often get missed. And a lot of coaches think that the tyrant approach is the way to do it by screaming and yelling, and that's not the case. I've always had students willing to buy in as long as I explain it to them, and that's something that's missed quite often.
Right. Everybody, you've been listening to Coach Chris Dyson. You're going to want to get his book, Target Practice, 8 Mistakes That Ruin a Love of the Game. Chris, I can't thank you enough for being on. And keep yourself warm up there in London, Ontario, huh?
Thank you very much.
We'll
do our best to keep warm.
All right. We'll be talking to you soon. Thanks again, Chris.
Thanks. Everybody, have a good day.
You are here in the limelight with Clarissa Burt. We have got to go to break. Do not go away.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Would you like to make more money, help more people, and have more fun? Tune in to Noah St. John's Money Mindset and Marketing Mastery Show, because you'll discover the money, mindset, and marketing skills that will help you create the abundant lifestyle you desire. As an international keynote speaker, best-selling author, and thought leader, Noah helps business owners increase their income, influence, and impact. So tune in to Noah St. John's Money Mindset and Marketing Mastery Show, live every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Influencers channel.
It's time to unlock some of the best kept secrets in health, wealth, and happiness. Are you ready to live your life to the fullest and hear insider tips from today's experts? Then tune in to The Forbes Factor with celebrity TV host and inspirational icon, Forbes Riley. She's a best-selling author and TV fitness expert, and you know her from QVC and HSN. Now she brings her expert advice and guests to the Voice America Influencers channel. Tune in live every Wednesday at 12 noon Pacific Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time for the Forbes Factor. We guarantee it will be the best hour of your week. Do you believe that being fit is difficult? Do you think it requires turning in your favorite comfort foods for boring chicken and broccoli and spending hours in a gym? It doesn't. Tune into Have It All with Devin Alexander. Devin and her guest experts will show you how you can have it all at any age, from relationships to money to thinking bigger than you've ever imagined. Devin will fast-track your goals to yummy reality. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time and 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Influencers channel.
We don't follow, we lead. Join us, the Voice America Influencers channel.
You are listening to In the Limelight with Clarissa Burt. You can call into the program at 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to info@clarissaburt.com. Now back to In the Limelight.
Yep, you are back in the limelight, everybody, with Clarissa Burt. And as promised, every week I bring you the best of the best. And this week we are speaking to 8 super influencer men that are going to be talking to us about excellence. And we just heard about excellence in sports, and now we're going to be talking about excellence in leadership and marketing strategies. I have brought in what I find to be the world's leading superstar in this area. He is working with people in C-suite and business leaders, military generals, also CEO to CEO peer groups across America. His bio is never ending of superstardom. And so I want to jump right in with him because we only have the half an hour, and I want everybody to get as much from many golden nuggets as we can from Jeffrey McGee. Hello, sir, and welcome on being on the show.
Thank you very much. Good to hear your voice. Appreciate the opportunity to share ideas.
I love it too. Jeff, I'm going to start really quickly with your background, which I normally do with most of my guests. We're going to get into all of the fabulous things that you've done in your career, but it started back when you knew something about working hard and on hard work ethics and drive back on a farm in, I don't know where.
In Colorado. Yeah.
Oh.
Again, your last show, you were talking about work ethic and integrity and respect of younger people, older people, and it goes both ways. Same thing about work ethic. I mean, we have a world today where what we have created, conditioned, and calibrated, doesn't make it right, wrong, good, bad, but it's a reality, where everyone thinks that the results of labor are easy, and everyone sees all of these accomplishments, and everyone wants a fast track to it, but no one really, really understands the work, the strategic work, the smart work it takes, the hard work it takes to get to some of these successes. So growing up on a farm in Colorado, just that was the reality. It wasn't seen as extra work. It's just what you did. And I think that's what calibrated me and a lot of other people. It's your early life that calibrates what you experience in your later life.
Right. So by the time of 15, you had your first business. You sold that by the time you got to college. What was that first business?
It was a concept of ads and coupons in the back of phone books. So your younger listeners right now will have no reference point, but anyone over the age of 40 will. You know, back in the old days before computers, we had phones, and those phones were on a wall. And you had a phone book, and basically the concept of putting coupons and ads in the back of those phone books was a business that a couple of us created in Colorado back in the 70s.
Wow. So by the time you were 24, you were also already recognized as – a Fortune 500 company. I think you became a salesman of the nation, or you were really certified in sales instruction, right? So
went to college to be a journalist, and that was my passion, and got very discouraged with the negativity of journalism in the 80s in Kansas City. And so if you're ever unemployed, listeners listening up, if you're ever unemployed, there is always one job on the planet, and that's sales. If you're not good, you may not keep it, but there's always a sales job. So in 1985, 1986, 1987, that transition period in the late 80s, I was the number one salesman in the nation for American Home Products, a Fortune 74 corporation at the time, and simultaneously also became the youngest instructor in the world teaching a Dale Carnegie sales class. So that was not where I started out, but it's where I ended up.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, and so you now, you have an awful lot of letters after your name, and I was hoping that you could clear those up for me because I have no clue what they are. What is a CBE?
So it's a great question. So I'm a big believer that if you're a professional, all professionals, there's a trade association industry you can be a part of. You should be a member of your trade association. Within any of your trade associations, there are typically earned certifications. And if there are, and you truly want to be a professional and be a part of that 1% cutting edge, super successful people, you should have that certification. So CBE is Certified Board Executive. So I serve on lots of boards of directors. And so there's a trade association for those people. And that is the only earned certification. It's a 80 hours of certification.
Mm-hmm. And what's a CSP?
CSP is Certified Speaking Professional through the National Speakers Association. So again, if you're a subject matter expert who speaks for a living, then your trade association would be NSA.
Without a doubt. And a CMC, sir?
So the Institute of Management Consultants, which is an offshoot of the American Psychological Association. So that is Certified Management Consultant. I have evolved where I've been a manager of people and a owner of many businesses, very large, very small, all sizes. And so within that space, that is a certification for management consultancies.
And PDM.
PDM is through the Direct Marketing Association of America. That is professional direct marketer. So marketing is a space and place I live in. So as my career has evolved over the past 30 years, those are different certifications I've earned to validate the different professions I've had. That it's not just I'm a practitioner in it. I am a practitioner who also studies within it. So that's what those have been all earned and attained.
That's extraordinary. And I also know that you're an author of more than 20 books. Three of them are college graduate management textbooks, four are bestsellers. And then you're also the publisher of Performance 360 Magazine. What possessed you to start up a magazine? Because that's a lot of work, too.
It is, and I appreciate it. So professionalpermformancemagazine.com is the URL if anyone wants to go to it. So great question. 24 years ago, I had the opportunity by luck and circumstance to start to interact with some phenomenal subject matter experts in our society. People like Stephen Covey and John Maxwell and Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy. Tom Hopkins. And through those interactions early in my life, doing speaking and training and writing curriculum for training programs that people would go to that would be offered in their local community at a hotel, et cetera, I started recognizing that there's no publication today, online or hard copy, of just incredibly successfully accomplished people that would come together and share a slice of their mental DNA on success. Achievement and performance. So that's what caused me to start Performance Magazine was threefold. One, could I get phenomenal personalities to contribute articles? And could they, would I be able to do that on a regular basis? And if that was one, two, would other people like you, I, and your listeners that want to really be super achievers, would people want to read it? And if that was so, the number three, then could I get advertising and subscriptions and generate revenue from it? So that's the fold. So again, Professional Performance Magazine, we've had world leaders or U.S. presidents have written for me, first ladies written for me, pro athletes, celebrities, entertainers, New York Times bestselling authors, C-suite of Fortune 100 companies. So we get phenomenal cross-section of personalities. And in every issue, we usually have about 20 to 25 contributors, again, that write articles on how to attain super success in different areas.
Right. So everybody's listening, you're going to want to go to jeffreymcgee.com so you can follow along as we're speaking. And then if you want to know more about the magazine, it's professionalperformancemagazine.com. You also have developed a managerial leadership series. It's called the Leadership Academy of Excellence. Can you talk to that for us?
Absolutely. So over the last 20 plus years working with business owners and leaders of small, medium-sized, and large corporations and working with Fortune 100, what I recognize is that the skill set that you need to have chronologically and psychologically developed within you as an individual to be an effective business leader is very, very specific and defined. And so over the years, what I realized was there's basically a sequence of 12 specific skill sets. So we developed this Leadership Academy of Excellence program where I go on-site and work with a business owner or senior leaders 1.5 days a month for an entire 12-month commitment. Through that year, we also are applying very specific leadership skill sets strategically and tactically to the participants' immediate sphere of influence, so your direct reports. We've created some phenomenal HR assessment tools that we use to track the development of your team to make sure we're always growing them and growing them forward. It allows us to get and generate significantly higher levels of engagement out of people, participation. Right. Mental participation, the ROIs go through the roof. And some of the tools we've even created have been adopted through the Society of HR Managers, SHRM, and through the Association of Talent Development, AATD, as tools that are used globally. So it's a very powerful program that we bring on-site to an organization. There's an online learning portal that goes with it. We use some of my college textbooks as reinforcements. And then each month we have a very specific workbook that we walk through that we develop one set of tools at a time and build on each month.
What does it take to be a great leader today, and how is it different from 10 years ago?
Great question. Yeah, again, leadership is always evolving, and I would answer it actually by giving some anecdotals because everyone has their own view on that. But I would say one element that I've noticed, you know, great leaders can write the resumes of people around them, and managers cannot. Again, leaders can write the resumes of people around them, managers cannot. You need both the manager mindset, which focuses on the functionality of a job, the HOWs. But again, leaders, their minds evolve in another direction. They tend to think bigger picture, more macro. So to be an effective leader, you have to have a hunger. You have to have passion. You have to have a desire for the things you do and for the people around you. It doesn't mean as a leader, you have to have a micro understanding of everything on the planet, but at least you have to be able to grasp how things kind of come together. So, you know, leaders can be born. Leaders can be grown. Leaders can be mentored, but not everyone can be a leader. So, you know, what does it take to be a great leader? I think that would be some of the quick ways I would answer it. But leaders have to also have a desire and ability to always want to grow yourself and grow other people around them. Again, the leadership mentality is about abundance. The leadership mentality is about optimism, entrepreneurialism. The leadership mentality is also bold. You know, leaders have the, you know, have the guts and nuts to say things that are politically incorrect. And a lot of times that is exactly the cancer that kills organizations. Your last visitor, you guys were talking about families and respect. I mean, the ability to boldly stand up and say, look, no, you're not entitled to that. You know, you need to work for certain things. Those are leaders' comments. But again, we live in a world where there's a lot of people that are managers that are wearing leaders' hats and they have no comprehension how to be a leader. Leaders understand what it means to sign the front of a check. Managers only understand what it means to cash the check.
Yeah. And so the question, the second part of that question is, how's it different from, you know, from 10 years ago?
I think today's leaders have to be more globally focused. I think today's leaders have to be more flexible and foot loose. I think today's leaders have to be more nimble. Today's leaders, though, like yesterday's leaders, have to be bold enough to put the foot down. I think in days gone by, and it's not, again, a right, wrong, good, bad. It just was the reality. The marketplace of centuries before and decades before, you know, your market, Clarissa, and for me, wherever you live, your market was basically that zip code. You know, then over time, as a leader, you evolved because your marketplace and competition was, you know, your whole city, you know, could be several zip codes. Then it was across your state. Then it was across state line. Then it was across, you know, time zone. Then it was across your whole country.
Across the pond.
You know, then it might have sneaked a little bit into the country before. But, you know, with the advent of global travel with airlines and the internet, you can communicate and you can be in someone's face through, you know, Zoom, through, you know, GoToMeetings, through, you know, Skype. You can do business now instantaneously, where before it took, you know, centuries to travel. Then it took, you know, years to travel. Then it took, you know, months to travel, then weeks to travel, then days to travel. So, so the leader today has to be realizing that, that your marketplace is not just what you see right immediately in front of you. Your marketplace is the planet. So that changes the game. It changes how you look at human capital versus financial capital. You know, it used to be leaders in the past, you know, you were trained that, that your assets were the durables, you know, goods, products, inventory, balance sheets, and money. People were not even really a reality. They were interchangeable. Today, I would say leaders focus, number one, your number one asset is your human capital, and that's what I fixate on. And your second capital is going to be revenue. It's going to be durable goods and et cetera. So it has. The paradigm has flipped dramatically.
Okay, Dr. Jeffrey McGee, we have to go to break. That's a lot of great information, everybody. I know that you want to hear some more, so do not go away because we're going to be right back.
Hear the stories. Be motivated. Be inspired. Join us today. Voice America Influencers.
Do you feel shackled to your business? Do you feel that there is no room for anything else, like a personal life, family, fun? Did you know that there is another way? Listen for The Unshackled Life with hosts Aaron Scott Young and Michelle Pearson Young. They'll discuss what helps your business work better for you so that you get to have a life. Aaron Young has been starting and running companies for over 30 years. It's time for you to finally have the time, money, and freedom that you've always wanted. The Unshackled Life, Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Influencers.
Want to improve your health, business, and life just by listening to a radio show? Well, we can at least move you in the right direction. Listen for Spotlight, the Allison H. Larson Show. Each week, Allison will speak with amazing guests and find out what's changed their lives and how they are changing the lives of others. From beauty to health to business and personal relationships, we're here to inspire you to live your life of passion. Listen every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Influencers Channel.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
This is the Voice America Influencers Channel. Be inspired.
are listening to In the Limelight with Clarissa Burt. You can call into the program at 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to info@clarissaburt.com. Now back to In the Limelight.
Everybody, you're back in the limelight with Jeffrey McGee. We've been listening to the last 15 minutes. We've got about another 15 minutes to go. Lots of great information. He is a leadership and training and technology super influencer. He's got courses, and we were talking about that when we went to break. And I want to be really kind of clear so that our listeners know exactly where they need to go to get some more of you, Jeff. First of all, you're up in Las Vegas, so I don't know if you do any of your events up there.
Yes, we do. So four times here each quarter, I do a performance-driven selling boot camp. It's a two-day intensive we do here in Las Vegas at Red Rocks Casino and Resort. So you can check that out on my website under the events section.
Gorgeous venue.
Performance-driven selling. We also do a two-day intensive here in Vegas for people that are subject matter experts that want to either merging into or want to accelerate their profession, their career, their business as a speaker, trainer, coach, or consultant. We do a program called Pro Speaker Biz. So that one also is right here in Vegas. And then we have an online portal. So if people want to, you know, personally accelerate and push their sales ability, their sales acumen, we have a 25-week long online sales training program and a 15-week long online personal coaching success program. So those are the four ways that we can touch them from our website.
So there are no excuses. If they want to, they can. And that's awesome to know. So here's a couple of questions that I had very quickly. In today's world, we were talking about before we went to break about how easy it is now, you know, to become global because of internet and how a leader has to think globally now. How do you teach, and I know, I'm sure you've got a lot of millennials in there, but how do you teach leaders to, that might be of a certain age, to work with millennials because they have such a different work ethic and mindset?
You know, that's a great question. So in our Leadership Academy of Excellence program, that again, businesses would be the person, it's a B2B program. So if you're a business owner or listener, if you work in a company or in management, that's a program that would be phenomenal for you because we spend actually a significant amount of time looking at the generational diversity gaps and the generational diversity connectors between the five different age groups in terms of how to connect. So again, it could be a millennial that's actually managing and leading a workforce of people mathematically old enough to be their parent. Just, you know, workforce and how you manage down. But the short, quick answer is this. If everyone would just kind of hit pause for a minute and don't look through the lens of your perspective, don't look through the lens of your generational footprint, but look through the lens of the other person's perspective. And again, don't get into the judgment game of right, wrong, good, bad. That's where you're going to derail and get in trouble. But what you want to figure out, what are the value drivers of each age group? Because every age group has very distinct value drivers. Those value drivers are what basically factor, condition, and shape your vision. And your vision is what tells you what behaviors you're going to exhibit and demonstrate or not. So how do you connect with millennials? Millennials are more cause-driven. Millennials want to, in essence, be in an environment where there's more appreciation and involvement and engagement. It's not always just about their own win. It's a collaborative generation. And when you work from that perspective, it's a different ball game than if you are a baby boomer and how you've been calibrated to operate.
Right. Well, is it just too much to ask of them to be on time? Jeff, that's my biggest challenge. You know, I am a baby boomer, damn it. And I want, you know, when I say I'm going to be there at that day at that time, I'm there that day at that time. I don't wait, you know, half an hour or an hour for somebody to show up. But I guess in today's world, that just kind of roll, you just got to roll with that. I have a hard time with some of those things.
It's yeses and nos. You're right. There might be generalizations where that's it, but you have to find out what motivates different age groups is radically different. And so when you know what motivates them, now you've got the old carrot on the stick, as they say, but you don't even need to use the stick if you know what motivates and drives you. But the second answer is, now you've walked into a different question, Clarissa, and that is how you interview to recognize who's going to be a part of your organization. And we spend a lot of time on that in the Leadership Academy of Excellence and in our college textbooks. That again, you know, what are the traits you want? If you want someone who has good work ethic, it's going to be loyal, it's going to be dedicated, it's going to be prideful, it's going to be patriotic, it's going to be, so when you write down those words of what you want, then it gives you a different way to shape to get them. So, for example, if I go to Agra America, and there are exceptions to my next statement, if I go to Agra America, a young man or young lady who's Generation Z or millennials raised in a farm, they're going to be loyal, dedicated, hardworking, focused, committed. So that's where you find them versus if you go into an urban environment And then again, you don't want to judge a book by the cover. But again, if in the urban environment is where people get allowances to get their butt out of bed in the morning, when they think everything is supposed to be theirs, when they live around people that bitch and complain for a living, so let's all bitch and complain, that's when you find all of these wrong people. But again, you can always find the needle in the haystack if you ask the right questions and do a better job vetting. And that's the game of the new marketplace.
Right. So, you know, my question now, it comes spontaneously, is, well, if that's the way it is in urban and you have to, you know, give them a trophy for getting out of bed in the morning, what is the next generation and the one after that? What are we going to have to do to get them out of bed? You know, that's I know you don't have a crystal ball, but that is kind of my worry, you know, and I probably won't be here then, but I worry about those generations.
You know, again, if we talk to, you know, a generation two or three above us, they would probably answer the question, I think, the way I'm going to try to answer. And that is, I think it is very cyclical. Things do come back around. It's just a matter of how far, you know, left the pendulum goes before it comes back, or how far right. Yep. And sometimes if it goes too far one way or the other, the course correction when it comes back is what bites everyone in the butt. So again, you know, there's a classic line from, in essence, you know, Aristotle and Socrates time frame that talked about the problem with the youth today is that they're lazy, they're not driven, and they always want things. They think they're entitled to things. You can change the words, but that saying goes back thousands of years. It's nothing new. It just is the generational cycle. So I think right now what we're seeing actually with Generation Z, your high school kids and younger, is that they're actually starting to come up and they're bucking the system a little bit differently from the generation, you know, X, Y, and millennial, that they are starting to question from the perspective of, why are we doing things just for the sake of doing it? And we're seeing some anecdotal examples of that in the media right now without getting too specific. But again, there's some things that are happening in the United States today for your worldwide listeners in March of 2018 that high school kids are generating some change in America today that older adults and institutions have not been able to do for decades, because what Generation Z is looking at is not getting sucked into the rhetoric of the big picture, but bringing it down organically right down to their home front, and you can make things change. So it's very interesting to see the cycles change.
Got a couple of quick minutes left in the show, and I know that you do a lot of work with my adored military. And so I know that you've been out to West Point Military Academy. You've done some stuff there, the Commander's Coin of Excellence, U.S. Army National Guard, and the like. Any differences there when you're training military? Because I know that, you know, they've got commanders and they got all this whole thing going on there, and it's different. I'm assuming that it's different than a regular corporate environment. Yes, no, maybe?
Actually, it's a great question. The military today, right now, is having horrendous human capital and labor problems. And the issues are actually exactly as they are in the commercial marketplace. And that is that there is a huge vacuum. Just because you are a senior leader in a business, just because you have senior rank, does not equate to being a leader, is what I've recognized in both businesses today, both on the civilian side and in the military. And so in the military, I'm working with some phenomenal generals that are leaders, and they are putting their foot down, and they are holding people accountable, and they are demanding excellence. And yeah, they have a little bit of more protocol because they have command and control structure. But the union cancerous mentality of let's be as worthless as we can and get a paycheck is also in the military. Don't be misled today. And that is a big challenge that the military is having, is that there's a lot of leaders that are good at the game of politics. They've got great blackmail on people, and so they're able to keep their jobs when the truth should be told. There's some senior leaders that should have been fired a long time ago.
Right.
And so the problem, of course, that it makes is you have lower-ranked officers and NCOs. That's like in the commercial world, you'll have junior managers and leaders that are rock stars, and they're actually leaving the military. They're leaving businesses to go work somewhere else, because they see the cancer is at the top and no one's willing to hold them accountable. And there's massive problems
without
going on in the marketplace.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Everybody, we've got to go because that's the show. And I can't tell you, this has been a fascinating interview, Jeff. I can't thank you enough for being with us. Everybody, again, Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, McGee, M-A-G-E-E.com. Go get all the information that we weren't able to fit into this half-hour call. Jeff, thanks so much again for being in the limelight with Clarissa Burt.
Thank you.
Everybody, we're going to be back next week, same day, same time, with some more super influencers. So there's your appointment. And don't forget, go out and do something really good for somebody today. Bye, everybody. Until next week.
Thank you for joining your host, Clarissa Burt, for In the Limelight. Be sure to come back for another great show next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Influencers Channel. Make this your week.